offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Wayne.
What time are we done here? 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Wayne Butler. I'm an alcoholic. By the grace of God and the power of 12 steps, loving and merciful God, in this way of life, I haven't had a drink since the 8th of November, 1977. You need not be impressed with it because I am. So. I also haven't had any booze, pills, powders, potions, or lotions that unnecessarily affect my emotions.
Yeah.
However, I have been known to date mind and mood-altering women, so I got it. Good thing there's no chip for that, I'll tell you. I'll be chewing on a white one for life, son. I want to thank the powers to be that invited me to come here tonight and share my experience. I know there's a lot of newer people in the room. I especially want to welcome you. I think that the greatest blessing in my life is that AA was here when I needed it, but more importantly, when I wanted it. I just absolutely love AA with every ounce of my being. I don't ever want to do anything that would disgrace or harm our reputation at the public level, the way I harmed my reputation and others in my alcoholism. My story is pathetic, so I'll spare you most of the details. In the next 40 minutes, I'm going to try to describe a little bit what I was like as an alcoholic drinking, because I think the most important thing that I can do is share my experience so that as a fledgling newcomer who may not be sure what's wrong will have a chance to identify. And so if you're new and you don't identify with me, that's fine. Go to some more meetings. You want to make sure you give yourself the best chance you can to find out if you got this thing called the disease of alcoholism or not. Your life could depend on it, as does mine. I have to get this out there. I may fumble around a little bit. I experienced a severe concussion 8 weeks ago, and I'm still having some trouble from that. I was in a motorcycle accident, and I've got 4 broken ribs and a broken collarbone. And my sternum's cracked, so I'm just a bundle of joy. And my doctor doesn't know I came here. He's on a need-to-know basis. I'm really not in that bad of shape. I mean, it's sort of like the disease of alcoholism. You can't see those broken parts of my body, just like you can't see the broken spirit in a human being unless you look closely through your own. And that's why I think so many people out there have so much trouble accepting men and women like us, like me, because they really can't see the broken spirit and understand that everything that's happened in my life is in direct relation to that broken spirit. And I think that's why I love alcohol so much. Spiritus contra spiritum. The spirits, they called it back then. Spirits. Liquor. The effect produced. Even Bill alludes to it. Calls it Bacchus, the god of wine. In other words, alcohol gives me a godlike experience. And I didn't know what that meant. And I'm so glad that I came to AA and stayed until my heart could hear what my head couldn't understand. And that's one of the reasons I'm here tonight. That's one of the reasons I didn't want to pass up this 2-week trip I'm making to California, is because it's good for me. It helps heal my broken spirit. Even after 39 years and some odd months, I still need that healing process vis-a-vis the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe the source and the solution are the two most important components of AA, and I'll just say that and then I'll get on with my story. I consider the source to be God, whatever your idea is. That's the source, not the solution. I need to understand that because I had God when I got to AA, and me and God got drunk together a lot. I had all the hangovers, and I did all the going to jail. But all the time I believed in God, what I had to learn was this isn't so much about that as it is the spirit, the human spirit that was so broken inside me that I would continue to destroy my life, knowing I was destroying my life. You know, it isn't remarkable that I slept in a dumpster on the alley behind Larry's Oasis for 5 years. That isn't remarkable. What's remarkable is I was okay with it. It isn't remarkable that I weighed 146 pounds that Halloween 1972 that I was sleeping in that dumpster. What's remarkable about it is I thought I was healthy. And the fact that I had four teeth, strategically located, wasn't remarkable. What's remarkable is I thought sexy. Am I really dead? I love Budweiser. I have to tell you the truth. One day at a time, 39 years, and I still love Budweiser. That's odd, don't you think? You know, when I was driving over here and crossing over the 405, over the just as I left Los Angeles when I was driving up here, you know, you get to the Roscoe Boulevard exit. On that side of the freeway is the Anheuser-Busch Brewery. I slowed down and had a moment of silence. I also like fine wine, like Ripple. How many of you are old enough to remember Ripple? I don't know. If you're under 40, don't raise your hand. You're lying. Let me tell you how I know that. The EPA came into existence, and the first thing they done was shut that chemical plant down. I also like Mad Dog Deucey Deucey. Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. I know I'm in Visalia. You know why I like Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill? Because when I puke, it looks like I'm bleeding. And I tell people I'm dying from stomach cancer, so you buy me a drink and some of you girls will date me because you feel sorry for me. I know how you are. I also like a little Cisco. I fly with a bird. Thunderbird. And a little bit of Night Train.
Yeah.
Other than that, I was top shelf. One quick story. It's a medical condition that there's a chance you might have heard about it here. If you drink like I drank, you drink Budweiser, Mad Dog, Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill, Ripple, Night Train, Cisco, and Thunderbird, you're going to end up with a condition known as alcoholic terminal diarrhea. I swear before God, I had diarrhea for 6 years. When you've had diarrhea for 6 years, you better have good decision-making skills. And split-second timing. I was short on both. So I was a romantic type drinker. Sexy. On October 31st, the morning of November 1st, 1972, I'm sleeping in that dumpster behind Larry's Oasis. And I hear a knock on my dumpster lid. I was home. Alone. Some of you women are uppity. And I was wondering who was out there knocking on my dumpster lid, because I know it ain't the dumpster pickup man. When you sleep in one, you better know when they're coming. Wondering who was out there, and my curiosity got the best of me, and I lifted that lid up far enough to look out, and there stood the most evil human being I knew in my entire life. It was my father. Now, I'm not here to put a rap on my dad, but I'm here to tell you my story in a general way. So here's in a general way. My dad was a rough, tough guy, genuine, bona fide tough guy. He drove truck for a company called Knox Motor out of Chicago, Illinois. He was mobbed up. He ran illegal whiskey and cigarettes out of Chicago. And my dad wouldn't think nothing about shooting somebody or stabbing them. That's just my dad. That's the way he was. And he would beat my mom up whether she needed it or not, he said. He'd be drinking that Jack Daniels, and he'd get all whiskeyed up, and he'd just beat the hell out of my mom and us. Now, my mom, God love her, she's a full-blooded German. Full-bodied, if you know what I mean. Tattooed from the neck to her toes. No, in 1958, ladies, tattoos weren't cool on you. You know what they called my mom? A painted lady. Once. That's why my mom and dad were so good together. It was a competition. My mom would drink a bottle of tequila and beat the hell out of him. I'm not trying to tell you a drama story, but when you're a kid, you don't understand what's going on. And back then, they didn't have what they got going on now for family help. Basically, I was raised by wolves. So why wouldn't I turn out to be a wolf? I'm not a tough guy. I never pretended to be a tough guy. I just wanted to be at peace with myself, and I didn't understand that until I came to AA. I tried to be a tough guy to make other people in my family happy, but I was a poet. See, my dad didn't think poetry writing and tough guy went together. So he tried to beat the poetry out of me, and it worked for a while. That was just his way of handling things. I'm so glad that you gave me steps 8 and 9 so that I could understand my father. I have no need to forgive my father, none at all. And you know what made it easier for me to get on my dad after I got sober? Is because I had no need to forgive that man because I realized how sick I am. He must be sick like that too. What's there to forgive? You don't need to forgive somebody for having cancer. It's just our disease looks more heinous. Forgiveness feels good. It helps, but I don't require it. I understand. That family didn't make me alcoholic, but it definitely put a spin on my personalities. Tell you one quick story about my childhood, and then we'll get moved on into recovery. You know, there's a lot of misidentification in AA. It's so important to identify the real problem. See, I'm a real alcoholic as described in our basic text, Alcoholics Anonymous, and as further authenticated in the 12 steps and 12 traditions. I'm a real alcoholic. But I didn't know that before I got here, and I didn't know it for some time here because I just didn't understand. I just wanted to drink a beer. What's wrong with drinking a beer? Isn't it okay to have a beer? I just want to have a beer. I don't plan on drinking 20. I plan on drinking 1 or 2. I don't know. But I didn't start out drinking. I started out drinking Pepsi-Cola. I know this isn't Pepsi Anonymous, but here we go. I'm this weird kid. Don't know what's wrong. I don't know why I feel different and alone and separate. I don't know why I... Let me tell you this story. It might sum it up better. I was a church-going kid. I'm the only one in my family that's ever gone to church. And no, you're not going to hear a sermon. I'm just... That was me. My nickname was Little Wayne. I hear someone hijack my name, but... My name was Little Wayne, and I sat underneath the crucifix every Sunday, and I sat there quietly and behaved and believed everything I was hearing. I felt good when I sat in that chair. I felt good when Blackjack, that's what we call him because he gave us kids a stick of Blackjack chewing gum so when we stuck our tongue out, they could catch us. And I loved that guy. He tousled my hair and kicked me in the butt on the way by and he goes, sit down. So I sat down. Stay quiet. I stayed quiet. I respected those people. I don't even know why. I just did. I didn't act like that at home, by the way. And one Sunday, I left church. And we lived on the river, Rock River, in Moline, Illinois. And my mom was out there cooking lunch, and she was at the stove. And I walked over to my mom, pulled on her skirt. She said, what do you want? I said, Mom, God loves me, doesn't he? And my mom said, yes, he does. I said, Mom, Jesus loves me, doesn't he? My mom says, yes, he does. I said, Mom, you love me, don't you? My mom said, of course I do. I said, Mom, how come I hate myself? She had nothing. Nothing. But that was the first time I told the truth about what was going on inside me. And there's no explanation for that when you're 9 years old. How do you hate yourself? How do you even have those words? No one had done nothing to me yet. And yet I look in the mirror and I hate myself. You see, I seem to have been born this way. I seem to have been born with this broken spirit, filled with self-doubt, self-loathing, self-centeredness, fear, inexplicable, unexplainable fear. I just hate myself. Fast forward to eighth grade, I'm acting goofy in school, I'm eating crayons, chewing pencils, biting people. Today they call it acting out. Seeking attention. I was hungry. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with little Wayne. We didn't have the equipment that we have today. We didn't have the understanding that we have today. So in eighth grade, don't worry, I'm going to become an alcoholic here pretty quick. I've got the ism. I'm in the ism right now. By the way, you all know what the ism stands for. I mean, I've heard I sponsor myself. I, self, me. Those are all cute. But I like the one that's in the big book because it's effective. ISM, internal spiritual maladjustment. And I seem to have been born that way. Eighth grade, they can't figure out what's wrong with little Wayne. So there's a test that came out in the late 30s, early 40s called the IQ test. Now, how many of you have taken the IQ test? Tell the truth. Come on. All right. I bet you scored pretty good. Call me out if I'm wrong. If you score over 100, you're pretty smart, aren't you? If you score over 120, you're borderline genius, right? Score a 150, an organization called Mensa will recruit you to come think for them. I heard an Al-Anon friend say they'd never darken the door of an AA meeting, I'll tell you. If you score over a 160 or 70, stay home. You're too smart to ride the bus. I want you to know what I scored when they administered that test to me, trying to figure out what was wrong with Lil Wayne. I scored a 57, and I didn't cheat. I got diagnosed mentally retarded, and I got put in the retarded class. They didn't call it special ed back then. There was no Special Olympics. There was just me and the short bus. It's okay to laugh. It is funny. If you have a child with special needs, I don't mean no disrespect. This is my story. I got put in that class. I got put in a group home. And I got to tell you something. That group home was 10 times worse than anything ever happened in my house with the alcoholism. So I couldn't just blame it on the alcohol. Things happened in that home that I'm not going to describe. It's not appropriate. I'm not trying to play the victim card, even though I was a victim. I'm not going to tell you I'm not a victim because that's lying about myself. But I also have to say, if you're like me, victims don't get to stay sober. Thank God we have 12 steps to focus on to step my way out of that realization. And I'm here to tell you, I ain't nobody's victim today. Nobody's. Isn't that something? That's power. And that power is contained in the 12 steps and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. In that group home and in that class, I overachieved. I became the leader. I was a born leader. I improved. We didn't read no books. We didn't study. They did not know what to do with us. Some of those kids now are known to have Down syndrome. But they didn't understand that back then either. Why do I tell you this story? Because it could be misidentified as mental and emotional disorders if you don't know what you're looking for. That's why I'm sharing it. Because I got diagnosed 17 times in institutions, 4 other times outside an institution with grave mental and emotional disorders. And I got medicated for those things. It looked real, seemed real. But there was no understanding about this thing called an internal spiritual maladjustment and how it affects the human psyche. Why is that important? It's in our big book. And it's in our 12 and 12. I didn't know that because I didn't have that out there on the street drinking Budweiser and fine wine. And dating mind and mood altering women. God, I love those. I do. Never mind. If you're one of them, get a sponsor. Quick. We had last period gym because they wanted to keep us away from the bullies as much as they could because it was really ugly back then. And one gym class, me and another kid, we were kind of dogging it back to the shower, and some of the wrestlers got hold of us, and it was a Friday, and they locked each one of us in a hall locker, and they didn't find us till Monday. That didn't make me an alcoholic, but it put a definite spin on my personalities. To this day, I'm cautious about tight, closed-in places. I just am. I don't want no therapy. I'm okay with it. I flew here. That's progress. Guy named Tom caught those wrestlers, and he beat the hell out of every one of them. I want to tell you that. I mean, he beat them unmercifully, and he became my best friend. Tom was a drink. I didn't know that then. Tom was my first drink, so to speak. He washed out over me the rest of school. You know, if Tom would have said, drink battery acid, I would have drank battery acid. Just like if my sponsor told me to stand on my head, I would stand on my head. Just like that. And it's senior now. I'm graduating high school. And by the way, we had to graduate in what they called the retarded class. This is 1968. They changed it for the class of 1969. They no longer put retarded on the diploma. My diploma from 1968 has retarded on it. I will never let that diploma go. It's a keepsake. I better become an alcoholic pretty quick. So Tom took me to the senior dance. I was his date. This is why it's important. Took me to the senior dance, and I don't know what to do at a dance. All I know is how to play putt-putt, because that's what we did every afternoon. And I'm back up against the wall watching these boys and girls dancing, and I don't know what to do. I really don't. I swear to God. I'm starting to get scared. Tom, he leaves me there by myself, and I really get scared. You know, because they're there, the ones that like to have fun with you. They're there. So I'm scared one of them is going to come over. I can't move. And then Tom comes walking across the dance floor, and he's got his hand tucked in his jacket. He walks up on me, and he opens that jacket up and pulls out this long brown bottle with a red, white, and blue label. Budweiser. King of beers. And he said, here, kid, drink this. It'll make you feel better. I didn't know I was a guzzler. Bottoms up, baby. I guzzled that entire bottle down. And I let out a big old belch. I said, Tom, that tastes terrible. Can I have a Pepsi Cola? He says, that's okay, kid. Have another. You'll get used to it. Now, here's what Tom meant. And it's very important. See, Tom was the son of the second wealthiest man in my hometown. And their whole basement was liquor. He entertained politicians and all that stuff. Tom got into his dad's liquor and got oiled up. And he had to go to the bathroom. Thought he was in the bathroom. He was in the bedroom. Thought he was standing over the stool. He was standing over an open dresser drawer. He peed in his dresser. And he said he almost went crazy trying to flush it. His mom made him do his own laundry. And Tom says, I will never do that again. And I'm living testimony from that day to this day. I've known Tom my entire life. Tom has never been drunk again. That's what he meant by, I would get used to it. But you see, what differentiates me from Tom and the other somewhat normal drinkers is that somewhere between 4 or 5 Budweisers, I got so good looking I couldn't stand it. I wasn't even retarded anymore. I felt myself moving. I did. I'm looking out on a dance floor, and I'm over here like this, right? And then I spotted this blue-eyed blonde dancing with some loser. I don't know what compelled me, but I walked. Tom says, where are you going? I said, I'll be back. I walked right up to her on the dance floor, and I snatched these words right out of the air from someone else. Can I cut in? I did it with my most manly, can I cut in? By God, she said yes. We danced that dance, and she asked me if I'd dance with her again. I thought it was cool. Found out later she recognized me from the returning class. She gave me a sympathy dance. You know how you are. Well, we danced the rest of that night. She told her date to go hit it. She liked Lil Wayne. We danced the rest of that night. We went out back, found out sex meant two people. I didn't know that. They weren't teaching us anything about reproduction in that class, I'll tell you that right now. It's ruined my sex life. I've been having sex since I was 13. I thought I was good at it. And, she complicated the entire procedure. And then I don't remember what happened the rest of the night. Tom told me I had a great time. I said, okay. A few weeks go by and I don't see her no more. Something's keeping us apart. I get called to the principal's office. Her mom and dad's in the principal's office. And then I see my mom and dad. Now, my mom and dad don't do the PTA. Tom escorted me down to the principal's office. He says, I ain't going in there. You got some trouble. I said, what is it, Tom? He said, you're going to find out. He didn't want no part of this. So I went in, and her dad was attached to the doorknob. Because as soon as I opened that door up, he came out of his chair to me. And then my dad got up, and I know my dad's packing a pistol. So this is going to get exciting. And then the dad, starts screaming at me. Are you the boy that had sex with my girl? Are you the boy? And I went like this. And then I said, can we do it again? Do you know he lost his mind? My dad had to stop him from getting over to me. Well, I found out she's pregnant. She's 16, I'm 17. He told me I was going to prison for 20 years. See, I'm from Illinois. Illinois has an old law. If a boy 14 or older has sex with a girl 17 or younger, it's statutory rape. I never understood those numbers, but that's the way it is. So he says, you're going to prison. Then he explained it to me. And I said, even if you're retarded? So I found out there was... It's really not that funny. So I found out you don't go to jail if you marry him. Because her dad told me if I didn't marry her, he'd kill me. That was 1968. You didn't let a pregnant girl go unwed back in those days. And that was just the way it was. And so we went to Palmyra, Missouri. You can get married in Palmyra, Missouri underage. And we went there and we got married. I was not allowed to come back with her. It was just an official event. Her dad said to me, as soon as she has that baby, you're going to sign a divorce or I'm going to kill you. And my dad said, we better do something because he's serious. And he said, I got an idea. I said, what's that? He said, let's join the military. What's this let's stuff? So in Moline, all five recruiters are right there in a row. Coast Guard, Air Force, Army, Marine Corps, Navy. So we hit them up and we went to the Marine Corps because I saw their ad. I'm a leader. Right? And by the way, on your high school transcripts in 1968, it's right there. It's using a retarded class. So I brought my dad brought my transcripts. This is 1968. There's a little action going on across the creek. So they were willing to pay attention to me. That Marine recruiter, how many of you know a Marine? Or were a Marine, just put yourself there for just a minute. He's got my application in front of him, and he gets to that line that talks about me being in a retarded class. He sees my script, my transcripts, and he starts laughing. He looks at my dad. He says, is this true? Were you in a retarded class? I said, yes, sir. I was proud of it. He goes just like this. Sent me next door to the Navy. I see another sailor. I see a sailor. They took me. I don't know why that's funny. They sent me to boot camp and put a rifle in my hand, and I don't know why, but I can hit the eye out of a fly. That's just the truth. I don't know how. I don't know. It's just a gift. And I ended up going to Coronado Island, and I don't want to pretend I wasn't a SEAL, nothing like that, but we were trained when you're going on a riverboat. That's where they started the training, was off the coast in Coronado Island. And by Thanksgiving 1968, I went over on a destroyer, disembarked onto a swift boat, Da Nang Harbor, and we went over to Camra Bay, where I was detached with Riveron 3, and I was on riverboats. I'm not going to go into that detail, but it put a definite spin on my personality. You know what I couldn't stop thinking about? That senior dance and that Budweiser. Fast forward, that dumpster, and I'm just a shell of a human being. My spirit's broke. Vietnam didn't do that to me. It compounded the fracture. It's sort of like being born with a broken arm, and life compounded it. That means when life heals it, the fracture that's original is still there. And that, ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion, is what Alcoholics Anonymous has the power to heal. The original fracture. The spiritual fracture that science can't figure out how it happens or how to repair it. They can't study the spiritual realm, folks. They can only study the physical realm. Try as they might. In my opinion, they can't ever find a solution for alcoholism because they cannot study the spiritual realm. You and I don't study it either. We practice it the best we can with 12 steps. I went to my first meeting. I didn't mean to. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm retarded, but I know alcoholic. By the way, I'm okay. It's not. I'm okay with being retarded. I really am. You get a date that way. I'll tell you that right now. Working it. I'm a worker among workers. So. You had to be there to appreciate it. Yeah. So my dad standing there in front of me, and the last time I saw him was outside the Rock Island County Courthouse. I'm not going to go into detail what I did because it's not appropriate for this format. But my dad took me to court and got a restraining order against me. He didn't even use Vietnam. They didn't have PTSD back then. What he did was he told that judge what I did. And that judge issued a restraining order. I could not go within 1,000 yards of my own mother. I couldn't go within 1,000 yards of my wife or my ex-wife. And I couldn't go within 1,000 yards of any of my kids. As I'm leaving that courthouse, I'm already plotting how I'm going to go get her. What do you mean I can't go see my wife and my kids? See if you can stop me. Right? And as I'm having those thoughts, my dad comes out behind the courthouse and he walks up on me in broad daylight and he pulls that pistol out from behind his belt and he puts it right to my forehead and he pulls that hammer back. And he says, "You and I both know that order ain't worth the paper it's written on. And I bet you anything you're already planning on going over there. Know this, if I find out you go anywhere near my grandkids, my wife, your mother, your wife or your ex-wife, I am putting you down for good." And my dad meant that. And here's that same man a few years later at my dumpster. And there's something about his eyes. Those aren't the eyes of a madman that I once knew. See, I found out later my dad had gone off and joined this cult. AA. They even threw gang signs. "Hey, are you going tonight?" They were anonymous back then, let me tell you what. I ain't making that up. My dad looked at me and he says to me, "Do you want to come home with me tonight?" And I looked around my little room. And I said, "No, thanks, Dad. I'm doing fine." He knew it was impossible. He knew that was the truth in my mind. And he left. To sum up in 5 minutes, I hope it's obvious I've taken the steps. You'd have to spend time with me to know for sure. But I've taken the steps, and I continue to take them on a daily basis. But here's what started it. I jumped out of that dumpster after my dad left, and I came across this restaurant, Harvey's Restaurant in Moline, Illinois. I saw this little 800-year-old woman slowly wiping down the coffee bar. I sized her up and knew I could work her. The only reason I went in that restaurant is because I want something to eat. I went in there and my odor hit her before I did. There wasn't another soul in that restaurant at this moment in time but her. Is it odd or is it God? Who's to say? All I know is she looked up and done something that nobody had been doing. She threw me a smile. She went and got a glass of water and a hot cup of coffee, brought it and set it down in front of me, and she says, "What can I do for you, sweetie?" Ain't nobody calling me sweetie. Took me off guard. I almost lost my composure. You know, you got to work up a head of steam to beg. This is before it was homeless. This is when you're just a bum. So I told her about that alcoholic home I lived in. I told her about that time I was 8.5 years old, getting ready to turn nine, and what we now know as a pedophile took me hostage for 3 days and locked me in a coal bin and done things to me that are unspeakable. I didn't even know what that was. I told her about that. Do you know, I didn't want to tell my sponsor about that. But I tell her that in hopes of getting a burger. The pride and the ego of an alcoholic. I told her about the madness in that group home. I told her about some of the unspeakable things that I did and saw done whilst overseas. She's bawling like a baby. I moved in for the burger. I even made myself cry. I found out she wasn't crying because of my story. She'd heard it all before. She was in a program called Al-Anon. She snuck up on me. See, if you're an Al-Anon, I damn well think if you're a waitress, you should have to wear a badge to notify us ahead of time. Give us a fighting chance. I thought I was working her. Oh, no. She was working me. I'm going to tell you why. Her husband, Harvey, was having a hard time staying sober. She knew from her Al-Anon teachings that the only chance Harvey has is if he has another alcoholic to work with. She decided it was going to be me. And 2 days later, she kept me at the restaurant. She took me hot. Well, she kept me there. And she let me mop and wax the dining room floors for 2 sausage sandwiches and a whole wheat toast. Man, I thought I was winning. I did. 2 days later, this short guy, Harvey was about this tall. And I mean, oh, he was so ugly, he made me feel good about myself. He had this nose that had, like, you know, the nostrils were like golf balls, I swear to God. And he had these red and black and blue veins running through his face. I didn't know this then, but I know it now. It's called spider angioma. And that's almost always fatal. Late stage chronic alcoholism. And when Harvey's heart would beat, his nose would go like this. I'm wanting to help this guy. He shakes my hand. Gives me the bum's handshake. There's a coin in it. I like paper. There's a coin in it. And it's too big to mean anything because I know what a half dollar and a quarter feels like. It's bigger than that. He says, "Take a look at it." So I open it up. It's this brass coin. It has 2 A's on one side. He says, "Turn it over." You know how they are. The glibness is just too much. He said, "God grant me something. Nothing about money, food, or shelter, or pell-mell cigarettes." And he says to me, "Take that coin tomorrow down to 410 16th Street, Moline. There's going to be some friends of mine there. You show them that coin. You tell them Harvey sent you, and they're going to help you, and I'll be along that evening." The only reason I went Because he didn't tell me I was going to AA. He led me to believe I was going to get something to eat. He told me there'd be a light bulb hanging on a cord in the basement. He said, if that light's on, that means they're in there. If I hadn't been hungry, I would have never went. But I went there, and I found the light in the cellarway. Harvey said if it was on, go in. It was flickering. I don't know what that means. On means on, where I come from. Flickering is not on. It's on and off. I was in the Navy. Perhaps it's Morse code. I don't know what this is. You know, I'm a thinker. It roasted my mind. I left there and went to Larry's Oasis and mooched me some Budweiser's and got oiled up. I went back there that night. By the way, Moline only had 3 meetings at that time. 2 on Tuesday, 1 on Saturday. This was Tuesday. Is it odd? Or is it God? Who's to say? I got back there about 8 o'clock. I don't even care if the light's on or gone. They owe me, by God. I've been through a lot. I went charging to that basement doorway, failing to notice that the header was 5'10"-ish. I'm 6'3"-ish. And I ran right into that header at the eyebrow. And the impact lifted me off of my feet, and I hit the deck just like that. And I slid into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And about 6 feet inside the door, with a round table, just like that. They were round so the devil couldn't corner you. You know how they are. I slid right between two of them. And this old crusty one gets up out of his chair, stands over me just like this, and goes like this. Gives me the safe sign. And then he growled at me. He said, slide right in here, you big dummy. We got a wrench to fit every nut that comes in the door. And by the looks of you, it's going to have to be an adjustable wrench. And he says, my name's Barney, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm thinking, oh, you poor SOB. That's a problem. But he's holding me up now, and I'm thinking he wants me to relate because I've been in therapy. He said he's alcoholic, so I got to give him something back. I ain't going to give him an alcoholic back because I ain't no alcoholic. I only drink beer. So I said, well, I'm ADD. He says, I'll bet you are. So then I said, you know what else? Because I'm working him now. He says, what? I said, I'm OCD. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He says, I'll bet you are. He says, you know what else I bet you are? Now he had me. I said, what? He says, ODD. Now, I had never heard of that diagnosis. It's not in the DSM-3, I'll tell you that right now. So I said, what's that? He says, you are very odd. And fortunately for you, we have 12 steps for odd people. And he became my sponsor. And he was my sponsor for 29 years, 5 months, and 14 days. Not a day goes by I don't think about or honor that man and his wishes. I'll close with this because my time is up. In 39 years and some odd months, one day at a time, I've had the privilege of being with you people. I've probably made every mistake you can make according to other people. I've done some things wrong that I damn well knew they were wrong when I did them. But thank God we have 12 steps to deal with the mess. It's sort of like training a puppy. You got to rub the nose in it a little bit. My sponsor took care of that for me. With love. And here I stand. Became a police officer sober. I know that doesn't appeal to some of you folks. Clean up those warrants. You'll like me. Can't become a police officer when you've been arrested 9 times. And you've been psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times. You cannot become a cop. It's impossible. Unless you live in Iowa. There they consider it good experience. You know what my sponsor calls me? Low class. Low class with a lot of high class people. And you have brought me from the gutters of my mind. You have. Because without you, I'm left to my own devices. I can work the steps all I want by myself, and it won't work. It's got to be done one-on-one so that God can be in the picture. If it's just me, you just got my say-so. But when there's two of us working this program, taking the steps, God comes into the picture. And one last thing. You know how they wrote, these are the steps we took? If you read Bill Wilson's history, because I have, it's very, because that was my favorite guy. And so I studied everything I could find about his entire life in AA from 1934 to his death in 1971. And when he wrote, here are the steps we took, he had two connotations. One, we worked these steps. The other is, we took this to heart. We took this program to heart. And we made ourselves a part of it. And I believe that's why Wayne Butler doesn't need to take a drink for relief today. Thanks for letting me share.